Hey, peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I am your host, Mick Raven. It is Saturday, the 3rd of February, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 800 619 18 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, podomatic.com, and get with the D program. So we continue, people, with the COVID Rats of Oz, which I've been doing for probably more than a month now, with two or three politicians or health leaders that supported the COVID pandemic hoax in Australia in the last 3 to 4 years. So the first cab off the rank today will be Peter Guttwein. He was the former Premier of Tasmania. A lot of people probably don't even know who he was, but he's a finger pointer. And ironically, I had a chance to meet with a finger pointer from New South Wales very recently. He was the number two in New South Wales to point the finger at people. And this is Brad Hazzard, former top guy, top politician at the time, number two under Berejiklian, under Gladys Berejiklian. So he was a New South Wales health minister at the time, and massive finger pointer. And, it was interesting to have a chin wag. He didn't know who I was, but I got the idea that, yes, you've lost your power now, bud. It's just another one of the plebs walking around, but not forgotten. Definitely, definitely not forgotten. So this premier, this story starts with him. Now, this is, I'm not going to do the wiki straight away. I'm just going to read out how the Tasmanian ball started rolling back in 2021. And it's got headlines, abc.net.au. Tasmania's COVID-19 vaccine rollout underway with aged care residents among the first in line. I'd love to see how many of those aged care residents 4 years ago that got jabbed are still alive. It's got aged care residents in Tasmania's north and northwest have received some of the first coronavirus vaccinations in the country. The jabs were rolled out in 12 Tasmanian towns and suburbs. And it goes on to say what suburbs, but this is the thing I'm saying, people. This is the first premier to allow the jabs to elderly people in aged care centres who had no control over what was happening to them. Okay? And I'm not going to read into it, but I'm just showing that this is giving you an idea of what a minion this person is. Okay? And it says, it just does a key point in that story. It says, an aged care operator says he is over the moon after 95% of residents were vaccinated today. Remember, this is only the first jab, people. And they've got pictures of elderly people who are 94 years old getting jabbed, not too phased, pretty excited. Back in the day, people, everyone thought they were saving the world. It says they will be administered the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine with the Oxford-AstraZeneca jab, not expected to be ready in Australia until next month. Everyone's rubbing their hands and going, we're saved. Just thought I'd read that. I'll see if Guttwein is even in the story at all, because he's the guy that would have rubber stamped it straight through. But now it looks like it's just about the jabbing. And it goes, oh, it mentions Michael Kidd. Deputy Chief Medical Officer Michael Kidd said there were still some people who were hesitant about the vaccine. For those people, I say the TGA has gone through its usual, every time they have a pandemic, rigorous and thorough process to ensure the safety and efficacy of these vaccines that have been approved for use in Australia. When it comes to your turn, please line up with the rest of us and get your jab. I mean, can I believe the way people were talking back then? You know, now the only one that mentions is the Deputy Premier Jeremy Rockliffe, who's now the Premier, said while the vaccinations were not mandatory, he was encouraging Tasmanians to have the jab. Well, he's next in line to be one of the ones I'll mention, people, since he likes to push the jab just as much as the Premier did back then. But no, he's not mentioned. So moving on to the next story. Then we move on to abc.net.au, and this came out August 2021. So this is just before the push to jab everybody. And it's got Tasmanian Premier Peter Guttwein admitted to hospital for undisclosed illness. So we can't blame the jab people. Hadn't really happened just yet. So I'll just read on. Tasmanian Premier Peter Guttwein has been admitted to hospital after becoming unwell. In a statement, Deputy Premier Jimmy Rockliffe said Mr. Guttwein was undergoing a number of tests which have not identified any medical issues of concern. So it says, during this time, I will be acting as Premier. It says Mr. Rockliffe, who became the Premier. Mr. Rockliffe said an update on Mr. Gutwine's health and return to work will be provided later this week. So something happened there. Not a healthy guy. He's only 56, people. Not a healthy guy, and along comes the pandemic. Let's see what his legacy is. And it's got abc.net.au came out 6th of April 2022. So we've moved right ahead. We've gone through all the pandemic. I'll just see if I can get his Wikipedia and see if it says anything at all about the COVID-19 thing. One sec. Actually, before I jump into his Wikipedia, I just realised there was an older story I had up on conspiracyhealth.com from abc.net.au back in June 2017. So giving you an idea of what this guy's like, it says, the headline I put up, "The Water Police Are Coming." And the actual title of the ABC story was Taz Water Questions Legality of State Government's Bid to Take Over Water Utility. This is where the government's trying to buy up water. I wonder why. It's got Treasurer Peter Gutwine at Treasury Estimates Hearing, and it says, Peter Gutwine says he took advice from a range of sources, including Treasury. And he was a treasurer at the time, so he took advice for himself. The state government proposed forced takeover of Taz Water is not legal, according to advice received by the Tasmanian Water Utility. The government intends taking ownership of Taz Water, which is owned by the state's 29 councils, from July next year. So this has already happened. Taz Water Chairman Miles Hampton says, it is the heart of the issue is whether the state government could legislate to override the Federal Corporations Act. It's reasonably simple, he said. And it's got, he said, the advice provided a clear indication that any state law could be subject to challenge. And it says under the Australian Constitution, it says the government announced its intention to assume control of the corporation amid concerns about ongoing boil water alerts in more than 20 towns around the state. It's got Treasurer Peter Gutwine, who's also the local government minister, was highly critical of Tazwater's 10-year plan to redress the issue. It says Tasmanian councils voted against the proposed takeover last month. Facing question at today's budget estimates hearing, Mr. Gutwine said he believed the planned takeover was legal. This is not only lawful, but there are no legal impediments, he said. In a heated exchange with Labor MP Scott Bacon, he said he was not aware of Tazwater's advice. I've taken advice from a range of sources, he said. I received advice about the takeover, including from Treasury, which is he is the treasurer. Mr. Gutwine was asked whether he received advice from a solicitor general. I took advice that enabled me to form a view, this is from himself, obviously, that what we are doing is able to be done. Already you see where this is going. I'm not going to read the rest of it. It's an old story, but you can already see this guy is, I'm right, you're wrong. And his advice came from him. And then you've got news.com.au. It's a story that came out on October the 16th, 2021. So I've just found a couple of old stories, so I'm just going to throw them in so we can get an idea of him. Because he quit quite early in it, people. He got the whole ball rolling and then he did a runner. So he's not going to get away with it like Gunner and the rest. No, we'll bring them all back. It says, fine doesn't fit the crime. Premier calls for harsher penalty for quarantine breacher who caused lockdown. A Premier has bluntly called for a much stiffer penalty for the infected New South Wales man who breached hotel quarantine and sparked a lockdown. This is when the witch hunts were going on, people. It says the Tasmanian Premier has called for a harsher penalty of New South Wales man who left hotel quarantine and forced part of the state into a snap three-day lockdown. How ridiculous all this was back then, people. Peter Gutwine on Saturday said he wanted to throw the book at the infected man who flew into the state early this week despite his cross-border exemption being denied twice. He said he had asked Tasmania police to increase the fine and that was given to the man because it didn't appear to be in line with the crime. He said, this is a breach that has brought southern Tasmanians to a standstill and I request that Tasmania police consider what other actions can be made. He's probably thinking of the crop whip, the hitting on the side of his leg. And he says, against the person as well as anyone else who is an accomplice to the escape. It's like the Great Escape, people. I believe very strongly that we should throw the book at people who flaunt our rules and send a very strong signal that this is not on. I've asked Tasmania Police to consider all avenues to ensure that the book be thrown at the individual. So he's an angry guy, people. But anyway, there you go. So this is when the chase was on, where anyone that stepped out of line were treated just like a leper, like they were trying to kill everyone, like murderer, really. Yeah, he's flown into the country. It's like he's trying to murder everybody. That's that story. Now we've got to another one that I... Oh, that's the one I read before. Okay, now we're up to date. Let's go and have a look at his Wikipedia and see if there's anything at all about COVID. I'm just flicking through it. Nope. Oh, there's a little sentence. Here it is. I've got it. During the COVID-19 pandemic in Australia, Peter Gutwein announced on the 19th of March 2020 that a non-essential travellers to the state, including returning residents, would be subject to mandatory 14-day quarantine. So there he is again. Let's just throw the book at him. In December 2020, Gutwein announced that he would vote in favour of legalising euthanasia in Tasmania. Well, this guy is obviously a minion, although he had previously voted against it on three occasions. Funny that, what twisted his arm, people? He stated that, "I believe in freedom of choice, and that's why I support the bill." Also citing the deaths of his father and sister to aggressive forms of cancer. It says, in March 2021, Gutwein informed Speaker Sue Hickey that he would not be re-endorsed as a Liberal candidate. She subsequently resigned from the party, leaving the Liberals in a minority government. 3 days later, Gutwein called an early election for May 21. He led the Liberals to a third straight majority in the House of Assembly, the first time in the party's history. Ultimately, the Liberals finished with 13 seats out of 25, unchanged from 2018. Here we go. Listen to this. This is after an historic win. On the 4th of April 2022, Gutwein announced his resignation as Premier. And as member of Tasmania's Parliament, his deputy, Jimmy Rockliffe, succeeded him on the 8th of April, 2022. So there you go, people. So let's see, where did he go? It's see what it says here. After leaving office, Gutwein allowed his Liberal Party membership to lapse. So something happened. Something happened. Now, it might have been because he got sick, you know, the story we read at the beginning, where something happened. But we don't know the full story. And in here, and I'll see if I can find where he ended up. Did he get death threats? And where did he end up? So I'm just reading here, and it's not saying anything here. No, it doesn't say anything. So I'm going to have to dig through all the stories that are out there because there's really nothing there, people. He's got a tiny Wikipedia, but this guy was in charge of Tasmania at the time, first place to get the jab. He's not getting away with it. He cannot slink out the back door. Not going to happen. Okay, so I'm just going back to some of the stories I've got. One here is abc.net.au. Came out on the 9th of April 2022. It says Jeremy Rockliffe has a big job ahead of him after Peter Gutwein's shock exit left many pledges unfulfilled. So something happened, people. It says Peter Gutwein unexpectedly resigned on Monday. His job as Premier was made more difficult by circumstances outside of his control, including a global pandemic. But by leaving early, many of his pledges remain unfulfilled. And another abc.net.au story came out on the 4th of April 2022. Peter Gutwein has resigned, but his legacy for Tasmania and as a pandemic premier is assured. Oh, yeah, he's pandemic premier, all right. It says, despite just 2 years at the helm, Peter Gutwein walks away from politics as a premier whose legacy will be remembered. Oh, yeah. When the 57-year-old long-serving treasurer took the leadership reins from former Premier Will Hodgman in January 2020, having been an MP for 18 years, there was little indication of what was to come. Within weeks, Mr. Gutwein was forced to ask Tasmanians to trust him to lead through what was arguably the most turbulent time in living memory. And trust him, they did. He built his reputation as a strong leader, prepared to make tough decisions, and was rewarded with skyrocketing popularity. It was that popularity that helped the Liberal government secure a third term in office May last year. So why did he leave, people? Why would he leave if everything was going so well? But his term in office will not be defined solely by the pandemic. Mr. Gutwein also brought Tasmania the closest it's ever been to having its own AFL team. Oh, I cannot read this, people. You know what I think about sport. I don't care about that. So that's what he's remembered for, really, people. And it says, as he announced his resignation on Monday, Mr. Gutwein reflected on the intense demands of being in the top job. I focused on everyone else's family, I now want to spend time with focusing on my own. This is always the reason they give when they do a run at people. Oh, I just want to see my family. Even though for 20 years he's been politics, he didn't bother about it before. Suddenly he's bothered. And it says, Mr. Gutwine had some time off last year after collapsing in his office. He had worked 46 days straight. Oh, really? That sounds more like the jab people. Let's see when he collapsed. It says, it says Mr. Gutwine had time off last year. So this is 2022, 21. He's definitely had the jab. Okay. It says he faced added stress brought on by a series of political headaches throughout the election campaign in April 2021. So that's when the jabbing would have started, people, around about that time. Maybe a little bit before that, actually, because I think it was about a year before everyone got the jab. Remember, they got it first. It said, throughout the election campaign in April 2021, Mr. Gutwine faced pressure over pre-selection of former Minister Adam Brooks, who had been later charged by Queensland police and pled guilty to firearms and credit card offences. They was giving crooks the job. It says, the reopening of the state's borders in December and subsequent Omicron wave was met with significant criticism from the Tasmanian populace, who had endured a summer of business interruptions, isolation and illness many had not expected, because jab didn't work. There was a resignation of the Education Minister, Sarah Courtney, in February, whose holiday to France as schools prepared to reopen this year drew heavy criticism. Then there was 2 weeks later, former Sports Minister Jane Howlett quit cabinet before questions about her alleged relationship with Jack Jumper's chief executive, Simon Brookhouse. Sounds like an absolute cabinet of crazies. It's got last month accusations that several government ministers, including Infrastructure Minister Michael Ferguson and Attorney General Elise Archer, groaned during question asked on behalf of a child sexual abuse victim survivor, dominated the political arena for 2 weeks. Eventually, those two ministers apologised. So he had a pack of, a circus going. So no wonder the circus ringleader left. It says, Mr. Gutwine, after 2 years of looking after other people's families, said he wanted to focus on his own. Within days, Mr. Gutwine will close the door on two decades of service to the Tasmanian people. It says it will be up to whoever next walks through the door to ensure the promises Mr. Gutwine made while in charge are realised. In other words, he told him a pack of promises and then he ran. So he's probably worse than all of them. He's probably the worst because he left them in the lurch on purpose. Anyway, so let's just keep going through the stories and we'll see where he ended up, people. We'll see what bags of golden legacy that particular premier ended up with. So it's got here, moving on, it's got the 25th of July 2022, abc.net.au. And it's got Tasmanian MP Jackie Petrusma. That's close enough. Resigns from state parliament. Fourth exit from ministry this year. So there you go, people. Tasmanian Police Minister, Jackie Petrusma, that might be better, is resigning from the state parliament for personal and family reasons, Premier Jeremy Rockliffe announced. So this is as soon as that guy took over from Gutwine, people are already quitting. It's got Ms. Petrusma, who also holds the Fire and Emergency Management Prevention of Family Violence and Parks portfolios, has been in state parliament since 2010. So these people are all doing runners, people. She is the fourth Tasmanian minister to quit cabinet this year, following Sarah Courtney, Jane Howlett, and former Premier Peter Gutwine. So there you go. So this is when the sinking ship is sinking, that's when they run. And it's the same with the COVID rats of Oz. They also ran. So you can see here that this is this guy that's trying to hold it all together. I have no interest in him, but I might do something on Rockliffe because he was behind Gutwine pushing and did get the top job after he went. So he's probably... he should be in the list as well, I'd say. I'm just going to put him in there now because I didn't realise that he was, it's right under Gutwine, and he was probably waiting for Gutwine to go, knowing he was going to go. Anyway, now we come up to date, almost, from when he quit and got a new job, October the 27th, 2022. Former Tasmanian Premier Peter Gutwine takes up new role, and you go, what is it? What sort of bag of gold? This is from The Examiner, and it's you got to subscribe, so I'm not doing that, but I'll just read one line that they've got here. Former Premier Peter Gutwine has been appointed the new chairman of the Migrant Resource Centre in the Tasmania Board. So we'll see who that is. That's just one headline. And I'll just click the next one and hopefully it'll... Yes, there it is. Gutwine gets a new job as Green Advisor. You're going, what? The 15th of December 2022, former Tasmanian Premier Peter Gutwine has been hired by Hobart-based ferry builder Incat as a strategic advisor to help the company transition into building electric ferries. That's already funny. This is also from pulsetasmania.com.au. It had to happen, didn't it, people? Bag of gold. Just make sure these lithium batteries get into those ferries. Incat chairman Bob Clifford hopes the move will not only double Incat's workforce, but also significantly lower emissions from the world shipping fleet. In an interview, Mr. Gutwine said that his desire to make the world a better place, even though he did a runner and left it all in a mess, was a factor in his decision to join Incat. After I came out of government, one of the things I decided to do after taking a significant break, because he was supposed to focus on his family, wasn't he, people? But no, he's going to now focus on how to make the world a better place for everyone. They just, as soon as they open their mouth, people, you know what's coming. And one of the things Incat will do, he says, in turning out these electric ferries, is significantly lower the emissions from the world's shipping fleet as a result. This is years ago, a couple of years ago now, people. That's both good of the planet and, importantly, will be good for Tasmania. Incat's chairman, Bob Clifford, said Mr. Gutwine's experience and expertise in government would be valuable in helping the company navigate the transition to electric ferries. So that's where he ended up, people. Bag of gold, job waiting for him. As long as he makes the world a better place with lithium batteries. I'm not surprised. All these minions do exactly as they're told. Okay? Doesn't matter. He would have got a phone call, end of the day for him. Did a runner, got his bag of gold out of there. Simple as that, people. Now it's Incat again. I'll just get the date. Doesn't have a date on it, actually. This looks like an ad. It is. It's an ad for the Incat. So I'm not going to go into it. It'll just show you how the Incat electric ferry works. It's a gigantic, modern-looking, crazy thing for Tasmania. 1,200 passengers. So I don't know if it's happening, but it looks like that's 2024. It's an up-to-date one. So could be the fact that he's now at the helm of a gigantic electric ferry with his hat on, blowing in the wind. But doesn't surprise me, people. And actually, it does mention it here. It says here, wait till you read this, people. Wait, here we go. Robert Clifford, this is the guy that runs, it's got here, former Tasmanian Premier and Climate Change Minister Peter Gutwine will join the Incat team in the new year as a strategic advisor. Mr. Clifford, who's part of Incat, said, "We are delighted to have the former Tasmania and Climate Change Minister." So don't ever forget all what these people do, people. Peter Gutwine joining our team as we position the company for significant growth. Let's have a look and see who's pumping the money into Incat, people, and see if there's a globalist amongst that. Then you can see the connection. One sec. Well, actually, it looks like he's joined a sinking ship because Incat, the catamarans in Tasmania, they went through a collapse quite a few years ago, and they're just a small operator now, just owned by a private operator called Bob Clifford. I looked him up. He's just an ex-fisherman gone... a luxury yacht builder, and doesn't even live in Australia. He's over in England. So it sounds like the bag of gold he got was very minimal. Sounds like he did a bad job, didn't really get a good reward. So I think in his defense, I'd say he's made entirely the wrong decision. He's done a runner as a chicken, not as someone rewarded. So I'd say in his case, he's just done a runner and he's running to something that's not really going anywhere. But there again, and there's no mention in Wikipedia of the fact that they've got electric ferries. So it sounds to me like that's going round and round in circles. And it's got here, even just reading it. Incat is already a world leader in building lighter and stronger ships. And now we're able to be a world leader in building lighter, stronger, fully electric ferries. It says this will mean doubling, if not tripling, our workforce. So this is now where they're talking about expanding, but I don't see anything in their Wikipedia that says that they've expanded at all. But it says here, the owner of Incat says, he explains that the International Maritime Organization requires a 30% reduction in CO2 emissions for new builds from 2025 and a reduction in the world's fleet overall emissions by 40% by 2030. So this is a guy that's pushing climate change. And the fact that they're doing this, people, all the fisheries in the world are starting to dry up. They're turning them into marine parks. You know what that means? Less food. This is a global push to make sure that there is less food. The farmers are getting attacked now. I might talk about that later in the podcast if I've got time, because they're trying to close farms down and fisheries. And that just means, and the population isn't reducing, it's growing, but they want it to reduce. So this is a global effort. Same with the Ukraine war, lack of grain for Europe, that's been blocked. There's farmers all over Europe protesting at the moment because of the new regulations that are coming through. This is not just being this year either. This has been going on for years all around the world. So you can see there's a global push to reduce food availability. And you can see the flooding is starting to become a big issue everywhere. When did we last hear about flooding on such a scale, even in summer in Australia? But it's rampant. And you start thinking, something's not right. That's correct, people. Weather weapons, they have ways to make it rain and flood. And they're doing it worldwide, not just in Australia. So every time you see these floodings, look at them with a skeptical view because it's not normal. And they're going to say, because they're doing it, oh, no, it's not us. It's climate change. It's you breathing out. So you can see the diabolical sort of pattern that's forming here. So there's more floods, they'll blame people more and more until people get so skeptical of people, they probably might agree with lowering the population. It could get that serious. Let's hope it doesn't get to that point, people. Now we're up to date with Peter Gutwein as well, because I've got another story. January the 11th, 2023, so a year away, former Tasmanian Premier joins the countrywide board. This is from esdnews.com.au. It says, former Tasmanian Premier, the Honourable Peter Gutwein has been appointed to Countrywide Hydrogen's Board of Directors. Here he is again, people. First, the lithium batteries. He's obviously been told, get your act together. Start pushing the renewables because we need this to work. That's obviously what's happening here. It says, Gutwein's role will include assisting with commercial negotiations, advising on the processes for obtaining regulatory approvals and authorizations, and assessing the strategic, financial, and commercial implications of the current and future green hydrogen projects. Gutwein had a 20-year parliamentary career in Tasmania, during which he was a member of the state cabinet, for 8 years as treasurer, with the last 2 years as state premier and minister for climate change. I had to put that in. Prior to entering the Tasmanian Parliament, Gutwein worked as a senior manager in the financial services sector. He has significant and unique experience as one of the eight state and territory leaders who led their respective jurisdictions during the height of the health and economic crisis presented by COVID-19. So there you go. And he says, I am very pleased to take up an opportunity with the countrywide board to help progress their green hydrogen projects both in and north and south of the state, Gutwein said in the statement. Green hydrogen as a fuel for domestic supply will assist in the transition to lower emissions. See, it's a finger pointer with the heavy transport sector and help lower Tasmania's emission profile, making the state an even more attractive for investment and the creation of jobs. Tasmania, people, you couldn't get it greener. There's nothing wrong with Tasmania. It doesn't have an emission problem. But for some reason, it does, because they keep telling you it does. It's just, compared to one city in China, would be probably 100 times more polluting than the whole of Tasmania. That's how ridiculous this is when you do the comparisons. It's just bogus. I hope people completely understand they have been utterly hoodwinked by the whole green renewable thing. It's the purpose of it is to take your energy off you completely and your ability to eat and even drink clean water, as obviously Taz Water was bought out by the Tasmanian government, which was him. Okay, people? Do you understand that to lose control of your food, water, your shelter is exactly what they're trying to do? Trying to get you out of your homes, get you out of your cars, make sure you own nothing. okay, then you are completely in their power as a sheep in the digital jail or farm, because that's what it's going to be, like a farmyard. So we are getting trapped in it. And so there he is. This guy is pretty diabolical because of the fact that he's yellow. He's actually a chicken doing exactly as he's told by his peers. That's why he did a runner and jumped straight to a lithium battery propelled ferry in a service that was failing. So he had no reason to do it, but there you went. Then he jumped ship, literally, and went straight to green hydrogen. So this is a guy that cannot be trusted. But anyway, that's Tasmania's legacy in the COVID-19 pandemic. That guy. Moving on. And now I'll let Dr. Kerry Chant, who was the chief medical officer in New South Wales with Brad Hazzard, that's the other one, I'll let her introduce what she thinks the coming world will be like. These are three words she uttered that went global, and people just went, what? I'll let her say it. One sec.
We will be looking at what contact tracing looks like in the new world order, in the new world order, in the new world order.
Classic. That made the rounds during the pandemic. And it's got here someone, just on someone's Twitter, that put up that, what she says. And it goes, is the Australian government trying to rile everyone up, or they just want everyone to know that they are no longer care about keeping their ambitions secret? And someone's put, this is insanity. It's because Dr. Kerry Chant actually said that. And everyone just went, why did she say that? It's, well, maybe she's talking about a new world order. That's what we all talk about. And it's got, and there's an article on it. I'll put it up. Whether it's got three words that sent Kerry Chant global. It was these three words that among thousands that the New South Wales Chief Health Officer said, but it led to headlines worldwide and sent conspiracy theorists into a spin. I wonder why. In the middle of a pandemic to say something like that. Anyway, let's get an introduction into what or who is Dr. Kerry Chant. One sec. Right, so I'm going through the Wikipedia, as I do, and I'm just seeing it, nothing. Oh, hang on, a little bit. I always say nothing, but it's a tiny, it's like two sentences. And you think, hang on, these are people that ruled people for years with utter power, okay? And in the Wikipedia, interesting enough, it says, in 2013, she was threatened with advocating fluoridation of the water supply in the city of Lismore, probably the worst place you try and do that, people. During the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, Chant often appeared alongside Premier Gladys Berejiklian, providing health updates, which she did. And that's it. Just the threat and, I was there. She was actually the face of the pandemic in New South Wales, really, next to Berejiklian. You couldn't have picked two more unattractive people, but there it was, in your face, pointing the finger. There's nothing you could do about it. You had to obey or be arrested or lose your job like I did. There was results for your actions. Oh, yeah. That's why they can't be forgotten. They might think they did the right thing, but they did not. Anyway, so there's nothing in the Wikipedia, no surprises. Then you go to her LinkedIn. This is extremely interesting, people. Of course, there's nothing in there. You have to join if you want to see anything. But it's all the articles that she likes and the ones that she actually wrote. It's got, this is a classic one, COVID-19 Sewerage Surveillance Research Program by Dr. Kerry Chant, November 2020. And you go, what? That's what they were doing. They were actually going through the waste to find if you had COVID and were not quarantining, or that certain areas were more infected than others. And they were using that as a weapon to lock people down. That's what they were doing. It's incredible. Then it's got shared by Dr. Kerry Chant. Obviously, she wrote it. I'm urging everyone to take the steps to protect themselves against mosquito bites this summer. So there you go. Already she's onto another platform that Bill Gates is pushing, which is, watch out for the mozzies. Well, I wonder why he's trying to genetically modify them. For what reason? Well, they look a bit like a flying syringe, don't they, people? so she's absolutely, she's got another one here. We all know mozzies are annoying, but did you know that in New South Wales they can carry viruses too? I'm not liked by Kerry Chant. I shouldn't laugh, but they don't hide it, people. They don't care. They think you think one way, but if you actually really think about what they're doing, you can see that there is an agenda behind it. It's not just by chance, or by chant, I should say. But there's a lot of other stories there. I'll put up the LinkedIn, but she's a mega amount. A free flu vaccination will be available to everybody. She just keeps pushing and pushing anything. Here's another one. Great news for those aged 40 to 49 years old. You can now register your interest in receiving the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. And all the stories are like this. It's actually unlimited. It just goes on and on. And they're all probably written by her and liked by her. but anyway, I'm not going to delve into what she's writing about it. We want to know what's her legacy. We want to know what did she actually do to people. That's really what we want to know. So starting from the beginning, just prior to the pandemic, she was a member of this board. I'll just go through it, and there's a lot of them in there. The National Health and Medical Research Council. So she was a member of it. I'll see if I can get to her little chin wag where they say who she is. Where is it? There it is. Dr. Kerry Chant, PSM. Dr. Chant is a public health physician, Chief Health Officer of New South Wales and Deputy Director General of Population and Public Health. It says, prior to this, she was Director Health Protection and Deputy Chief Health Officer. Oh, that was a mouthful, people. Dr. Chant has extensive public health experience, having held a range of senior positions in New South Wales Public Health Unit since 1991. She has a particular interest in blood-borne virus infections, communicable disease prevention and control, and Indigenous health. Okay, so she's on a list with these people. Sorry for being tongue-tied there, but this is one person that really did bug me during the pandemic. I face with Berejiklian and Hazard in New South Wales, where I am, constantly on the TV telling us the doom and gloom, and where are they now? So she's with people like, see if we can get to it. People that you've heard I've already spoke about. Professor Michael Kidd, that's a general practitioner. He's a member of the Australian Therapeutic Goods Advisory Council. She was also in there with, and I'm just flicking through the ones, Dr. Paul Kelly, remember him? He's a member of the World Health Organization Committee. So another one. Then we've got, and there's quite a few of them, I'm just skipping through them, Dr. Jeanette Young. He was the Chief Health Officer for Queensland. Remember her? Still in power. Still thinks that she can control Queenslanders when the next pandemic comes. Then you've got Professor Brendan Murphy. Remember the one that did a runner from the TGA? Not the TGA. The other one. I'm getting mixed up with Skerrick, but they're all the same. They're all COVID rats of Oz. But no, he was the Chief Medical Officer. He was her boss. He did a runner. Then you had, there's a few other that I haven't spoken about, actually, I can see in the list, but you can get the general idea that she was a member of the council from 2015 to 2018. So she's already in there, one of the COVID rats of Oz, ready to go. So that's what they do. They groom them. They get them ready. So that's why you got to look at the next lot to see who's given them their position and what they're expected to do, because they will do it ruthlessly, and this is the problem. Where you've got people like, we'll see what happened to Chant too. We're not sure. I think she's still amongst it, actually, because I don't think she's relinquished her power just yet, just like a few of the other ones I mentioned, like last week when I was talking about Andrew Barr, that's the Federal Minister for the ACT, won't give up his power. And you had the other one, Nicola Spiria in South Australia, won't give up her power. Most of them have seen the light and ran, okay? Now, moving on to the next story. Now, this is during the pandemic, and it's a COVID story that Conspiracy Oz put up. This is back in September the 7th, 2020, and it's got To Mask or Not To Mask. Now, that's my title. The title here is New South Wales Case Caught Virus While Wearing Mask. So that means a New South Wales case that caught the virus while wearing a mask. The Northwest Star, Mount Isa, Queensland. So this came out, I still get the date, so I've already done the date, but it's from the northweststar.com.au. And it says more than 100 health workers across Sydney, two hospitals, are in isolation waiting to see if they have COVID-19 after a colleague caught the virus while wearing a mask. It says there are 4 new cases in New South Wales. This is back before it blew out, people, including 3 healthcare workers in 2 Sydney hospitals and a returned overseas traveller in hotel quarantine. This is when it all started, when everyone was panicking, because there was no vaccine. It just began and everyone was going, I don't want to catch it. Quarantine, hide, get under a rock. And it says there, Premier Gladys Berejiklian says it's a scary reminder of how contagious the virus is. We always need to be on our guard because the disease is like none other than we've experienced, she told reporters on Monday. So she really cranked it. Even if you're wearing a mask, you can still get it. That's because a mask never worked. And you can still unintentionally give it to others. It's important for us to stick to the rules. This is just insane, people, what we went through. But anyway, it says, Dr. Chance said the state's hospitals were still operating safely and effectively, and it was important New South Wales residents don't delay urgent care. Meanwhile, 2 Sydney schools are closed after students tested positive. So it's just, this is when everyone was using the stupid PCR test that didn't work properly, and everyone was obeying it. You know, you vaguely had it or you had a cough, then you must have it. And it says health authorities are working with the education sector to come up with appropriate COVID-safe plans. But Dr. Chant has hinted she may allow dancing despite the activity being banned at weddings. Can you believe that statement, people, now that we're in post-apparent COVID phase? She hinted she may allow dancing. That's like when Brad Hazzard said he may allow singing in church, but he's not sure. This is comical, but it should never be forgotten. And it's actually not even funny. This could be worse. The screws could be tightened even harder in the next pandemic. So this is the reality of the world at the moment, people. You think, it's past us. No, it isn't. Not by a long shot. Now, another story that was in conspiracyhealth.com, this came out on the 19th of December 2020, abc.net.au. It's got Sydney's northern beaches, this is where I am, will be locked down until Wednesday after New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian confirmed 23 new COVID-19 cases, including 10 that were reported yesterday. So I won't worry about what she's saying, but it's not far from where I was when this was happening. I had a mean meme in that one. If you remember the movie called The Hurt Locker, where the guy's wearing the full suit because he's got a diffuse and explosive device. So, you know, one of those guys dressed like that. They look like an old-fashioned undersea diver with the giant round helmet on. Well, I got that guy, just like I did a meme recently of the electric scooter where the mayor was carrying 2 shopping bags, but then I put the head of another activist on his shoulders. This guy is also got the bags ready to go shopping, and it says he's back from grocery shopping. So it's got this guy, because that was the COVID thing. You might catch it and die, so you needed to suit up. Anyway, now it's got Chant in that story saying, you know, New South Wales Chief Health Officer Kerry Chant said there were 12,000 tests recorded at 8 p.m. last night, up from 7,500 the previous period. It comes as people come forward for testing but are facing lengthy waits of several hours of testing clinics across the northern beaches and beyond. It says health authorities said they were still confident it was relatively localized outbreak. So there you go. It's Not a great response from her just yet, not in that story, but she's starting to make herself known. Remember, this was early days. And it says here, Dr. Chance said sewage testing on December the 16th had returned a positive result, whereas previous testing on December the 10th had proved negative. That gives us confidence. This is a relatively recent addition, she said. So there you go. I mean, this is a sort of probing these people were doing when they had the open slather to do what they want. So moving on, next story. I mean, but this is serious stuff. It's funny sort of now, but back then it was not funny at all, okay? So this story is not targeted, really? And it's got orders, 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 stay-at-home orders. That's the title I put up. But the actual title is stay-at-home order for Byron Shire, Richmond Valley, Lismore and Ballina Shire. And this is the 9th of August 2021, so any people back then will know and remember what happened to them. Four local government areas, I was calling them LGAs back then, remember people, in the New South Wales North Coast, prior to the flooding, by the way, two people, will go into lockdown after a positive case travelled to the region from Sydney. Sounds like a setup, doesn't it? The same rules will apply to lockdown to the current restrictions in Greater Sydney, Hunter region, parts of the New England region. In a statement, New South Wales Health said the region's lockdown came after updated health advice from the Chief Health Officer, Kerry Chant. The statement said that stay-at-home orders were to protect the people of New South Wales from evolving COVID-19 outbreak. We understand this is a difficult time for the community and appreciate their ongoing patience and cooperation, the statement said. So this is her just dictating to a place nowhere near her to do as they're told. This is the place that was completely flooded out not long after that and still haven't been fixed up. They're trying to acquire that area. And if you go online right now and type in Lismore Smart City, you'll see that they're going to build a smart city there in 2036. So they needed to clear the ferals out. Think about that one. Now, I just found this article. I didn't have this in the story ready to talk about, but I found this link when I did a search, and I thought, it's not bad. 2nd of August 2021. Who is Dr. Kerry Chant? Seven things you didn't know about the New South Wales Chief Health Officer. And I thought that was an odd site, even though it's yahoo.com. I just thought it was an odd thing to put up on a site, but I thought I'd have a squiz at it and see what was written about it to see if what sort of details are in there, something different that we didn't know of. And it's just got Chant is public health physician and has served as the state's chief health officer since 2008, so 13 years since when this article came out. She starts the day at an early meeting with Berejiklian in his New South Wales Health St Leonard's headquarters, which is typically followed by an emergency cabinet meeting, then more briefings. So godlike powers back then, people. And it says, before taking up the mantle of CHO, she was Director of Public Health Unit of Sydney Southwest Area Health between 1995 and 2005. So she's been part of the dictating of health since day one. Okay, it says she's got 4 degrees, so they're making sure that you know she's the boss. It said, before studying medicine, she worked in retail and in a pharmacy. So you thought, oh, that's enough to turn you into what she became. And it says, just moving on. She was threatened in 2013. Being in the public eye has a price. In 2013, Chant was accosted and threatened in Lismore. Funny that, just right after that story about where she threatened them. After providing a submission to the council on the benefits of fluoride, the council just started vote to reverse a ban on fluoride in water. But in the car park after the vote, an anti-fluoride protester told Chant, "We know your face. I have friends in Syria." It says the scene was witnessed by Lismore paediatrician Dr. Chris Ingle, who said Chant handled it professionally and calmly. Well, it was payback now, isn't it? We walked away and that's when she started screaming abuse at us. So always the protesters, the evil one, always people, unless it's a protest that they want, which is like the, what was the, I can't remember those movements. You had the Antifa, which is the anti-fascists. They let those ones do. And the Black Lives Matter ones. They were allowed to protest, even if there was COVID. And then they realised later, hang on, no, that's a lot of people. We can't let that happen. But they did initially let them do it. But all these other ones, no, they're just evil. And it says, she'll battle broken glasses to appear on TikTok to get her message across. This is when she's telling everyone. Apparently, the picture's gold, people. You've got to check it out when I put it up. She's putting on a pair of glasses with a broken handle on it, and it's sitting. She already looks bad enough now, but with the glasses half hanging off her face, it looks like pure evil, people, coming at you. But they're praising her in it, saying, oh, they're, you know, let's hold her glasses, our glasses out to her. You got all these people in Twitter holding their glasses out to her. Ridiculous people. Then there's a photo of her getting the AstraZeneca, and there's an odd line in this story. You can read it yourself when I put all this up, because I will. There's an odd line in this story that doesn't make much sense. It says it's showing a picture of her getting the AstraZeneca vaccine with a typically evil smile, because she can't help it. It doesn't matter whether she's smiling or not. She just looks like pure evil, and she must know that herself. And it's got here, in a press conference last week. Now, remember, this is back in, let's see if I can get the date. this story came out. So it was around August 21. So the pandemic is starting to take hold. It was the beginning of it. It says here, and this is very odd line, people. When you hear this, you won't understand what I've just said, and I don't understand what I've just read, but you'll hear it. It says, in a conference press conference last week, Chant hinted at how demanding her job was when urging the public to consider getting the AstraZeneca vaccine. It shows a picture of her getting it. I have had AstraZeneca. My husband, who I do care for dearly but have not seen much of, has had his first dose of AstraZeneca. So this is the person that, this is why they never see their families. That's why they say when they give up, oh, I've got to see my family. It's like, well, you didn't do it for 20 years. What was the change of heart? How about a death threat or a bag of gold or both? It says here, her mother-in-law, her husband's mother, has also taken the AstraZeneca vaccine, she added. Now, this is the line. Listen to this carefully. The chief health officer would not recommend AstraZeneca to someone they care about if they had concerns, she said. Now, that has got to be a typo. That is exactly as it's printed, people, what I just said. So whether this site, yahoo.com, is reputable or it's a typo, I don't know, but that's what it says. And we all know that AstraZeneca was booted out after that anyway with the blood clots. So that's a very odd statement at that time. So I don't know. To me, it has to be a typo, but maybe not. Anyway, so that, I just thought that was one of the seven things. Anyway, there's other ones too about winning awards and this and that and that, but nothing really that's worth reporting on, put it that way. Now, the next one is even more interesting. Petition to remove New South Wales Chief Health Officer Dr. Kerry Chant. A petition went up to get rid of her, people. Can you believe this back at the time? It's got... reading on, it says, a reader advises this petition has been taken down by change.org, so it was safe to assume change petitions are no longer reliable. We would suggest they be ignored in the future. And that's a really, really good point. I remember when this happened, and I do a lot, as you know, with change.org. I have a lot of petitions up there. When I saw that, I thought, this is dangerous. Because the petition, it says, well, I'll just read on. I am writing to advise your media outlet, that the petition you posted on your website to have New South Wales Chief Health Advisor Kerry Chant removed from office has been removed by change.org and is showing as no longer available to sign. And it's got here is a screenshot of the change.org page. Very disappointed in change.org with their community guidelines aligned with mainstream media and mainstream big tech to censor truth, real news and rule of law demands by the people. And there you go. So I'm going to click on it and just see if I can refresh my memory, because they've got a link in there to show you what it looked like before it got pulled down. And there it is there. Actually, no, it's just going to change.org. So they didn't do a screenshot, and they really should have. They should have done a screenshot. So that link, unfortunately, people, just goes to change.org. Doesn't really say anything about that particular petition. But the fact that it was removed is good enough. So it's got. I'll see if they have a screenshot. They might still have it there. I think I've got it here, actually. Let's have a look and see if this works. But I don't think they're going to leave it up there. So, yeah, it's gone. Okay, that's what I thought. They would have had to have done a screenshot and put it into the actual article. Okay, so what they've done is they've left the writing up for the petition in this article. So it says here from the petition, as Australians, we can no longer stand by and watch Kerry Chant destroy our society, hurt our citizens and threaten our children under the guise of a health advisor to the Premier, while her actions favour installing totalitarian New World Order, which she publicly referred to this week. So that's when the petition would have come out. Since this outbreak began in Sydney, she has shown both gross incompetence and criminal negligence in her role. At no time has she referred to or made mention of the dozens of studies and papers written by experts from around the world, which are of one voice on two critical actions. Do not lock down and masks do not help, only harm. Instead, she promotes these actions, making them central in what can only be called a brainwashing of the public to make them docile and compliant. Every single thing this woman has done matches textbook perfect mind control techniques. We cannot let a woman who tortures the public for her own ends be in charge of injecting gene therapy to our kids. since the mask mandate and lockdown rules are also in blatant violation of federal law, and that's the Biosecurities Act of 2015, and therefore illegal, the Premier and the Prime Minister have as their duty the job of rescinding both mandates immediately and hold to account Kerry Chant for her role in the damage caused. She's just following orders from the, you know, she's the minion people. Finally, she disregards a fundamental rule and suggests policy based on case numbers obtained by the PCR tests cycled above 24, which makes most of them false positives. Rest dubious. When pandemic policy should only be considered against the metric of the death rate. A quick look at these figures shows how New South Wales was gaslighted by Chant and media hacks into the illegal and unwarranted lockdowns. Throw the book at her, Sydney. She should be disbarred from medicine and charged with crimes against humanity. Well, that's why they took that one down. But still, there it is, people. I mean, put it in black and white at the time when all this stuff happened. Okay, that a lot of people were angry back then. And they've got 15 thoughts on the petition to remove New South Wales' Kerry Chant. And that's Dr. Kerry Chant. So I'll just see what they say. It says, yes, they took down Jasmine's petition. So I've started a replacement, being careful not to trip the community guidelines. So let's see if that one stayed up, people. I'm going to click the link, but I'd say it's gone as well. It's gone. They would have traced it through the actual comment. So you can see the prostitute media and the media in general are doing what they're told from the global masters as well. And it's got here, and this is the part about the New World Order that she said, three words that sent Dr. Kerry Chant global. And that's what I mentioned before. An innocent slip of the tongue from the state's chief officer has sent some corners of the internet into a spin, led to furious commentary by fringe commentators and picked up the ears of the conspiracy theorists everywhere. And it says those three words were New World Order. Just hilarious, people. But this actual article here, it's from news.com.au, is sort of bagging people for getting bothered about what she said. When really, if people really look at what she said, it actually, it's a minion. The minions, they know. They're not stupid, Hazard and them. They all know. They can plead dumb for their own fear tactic because now they're at the wrong end of the stick. But at the time, they knew exactly what they were doing. This would have been, they would have been just sitting there just going, oh, I have absolute power. They do. There's no doubt in my mind it's exactly how they would have been at the time. But now that, of course, it's all past, they've actually going back into the shadows, so you don't hear of them anymore. Hence the meeting I have, or the chance bump into with Hazard. He doesn't know who I am, but I knew exactly who he was. But that's the thing. They don't know who their enemies are. They won't know them because they're faceless, whereas he is not faceless. And I'll make sure that remains that way anyway. Actually, in the article, actually refers to what Hazard says too, because he says the same thing. It's got further fueling the conspiracy theories, however, is the fact that it's not the first time New World Order has cropped up in a New South Wales COVID press conference. I should have mentioned it when I was yabbering to him. It would have been interesting to see how we react to that one. Health Minister Brad Hazard has also uttered the three-word phrase a few months ago. So this is back then. We're in a pandemic, a 1-in-100-year event. So you can expect that we will have transmission from time to time, and that's just the way it is. We've got to accept that, that this is a new world order. Anyway, you got to watch what you say, Brad, because, you know, it could come back and bite you when you become a nobody, which he virtually has become. So he's going to be watching over his back now from now on, especially if another pandemic comes. I'll be looking for these sort of scurrying rats that got away, but not really got away. Because, you know, if you're going to get that much coverage at the time and finger point and destroy people, it's going to come back and get you. Oh, yeah. Especially when you least expect it. Now we're getting a bit more up to date with Dr. Kerry Chant. abc.net.au, 25th of September 2023. New South Wales Chief Health Officer Kerry Chant very happy to front federal COVID-19 inquiry. This is when they're actually inquiring about, did you do the right thing when you did this? Oh, very happy. So it says, The New South Wales Chief Health Officer has admitted there is a catalogue of things the state would have done differently in responding to COVID-19, but would not say whether in hindsight she would recommend lockdowns. Dr. Kerry Chant said she would be very happy to front an inquiry announced by the federal government last week into Australia's response to the pandemic, even though the actions of states and territories will not be examined. At a media conference in Sydney on Monday, Dr. Chant was asked if she would still recommend lockdowns and curfews. "I think those matters can't be answered in a simple question," she said. Of course she'd do it again. "It's important to remember that we didn't actually think we would get a vaccine for much of 2020. Oh, they knew people. They would have definitely known. This was all a precursor to the QR coding people. Now, we'll be entering into a new pandemic with the knowledge that vaccines will emerge quite quickly." That didn't work. She said, "Knowledge of the virus was evolving throughout the pandemic, making the response difficult. I think there would be a catalogue of things we would have done differently. I think the lesson would be never preclude anything." This is someone that pointed the finger so hard, people. Dr. Chant said the pandemic improved the health department's communication skills and taught authorities to embrace new technologies early. So, yeah, authorities. "In terms of telemedicine and telehealth, they love it, people, because it's online. E-prescriptions and the ability to scale. There are so many things that we've learnt during the pandemic, which put us in a much better, greater position going into the next pandemic." Sorry, people, but she's just done it again. She should have said pandemic too, like Bill Gates. It's just amazing, these people. They never cease to amaze me. And it says, "But as Dr. Chan outlined the lessons learned, she was cut off by Chris Minns." I remember when this happened to people. He did. He actually virtually pushed her out of the way. And it says, "Anyway, we've had 2.5 years of COVID, so we can probably move on to other questions that we've got," he said. Yeah, that's so funny. He did. I remember this when he pushed her. He's now the Premier, obviously, of New South Wales now. But he actually, yeah, they don't want to know about these people. So Minns may not be a minion, but he's got the name. But he'll turn. They when they offer the bags of gold when they're not popular, they turn people, don't worry. But there you go. So there's nothing else to read in that. She got pushed out of the interview. But no, she would do the lockdowns and curfews in a heartbeat, people. Trust me. Anyway, with her prediction of pandemic two, the next article comes from smh.com.au, which is the Sydney Morning Herald, and it came out November 26, 2023, so not that long ago, only a few months ago. Kerry Chant issues warning of looming health crisis. New South Wales health system must adapt to reflect its ageing population, the state's top doctor has said, warning public hospitals are increasingly a place of last resort for patients let down by aged care and primary care services. How about all the people getting sick from after the jab? She mentioned that, Pitt. A joint report by Chief Health Officer Kerry Chant and senior New South Wales health bureaucrat Dr. Nigel Lyons and Deb Wilcox, probably new names for the future, people, argued the shifting burden of disease towards conditions associated with aging and mental health required greater investment in our out-of-hospital services and preventative care, which they said were discouraged by the current funding model. What's the looming health crisis? The report was prepared in response to a request from the Special Commission of Inquiry into Healthcare Funding, which begins on Monday. So they want money. Oh, no, we've got a problem. We need more money. I think that's the health crisis, that they need more money. According to the projections in New South Wales Health Future Health Report published last year, there will be 1.7 times more activity in New South Wales health system by 2032 if it continues to rely on its current model of care. People over the age of 65 will account for 45% of activity. Well, that's because they've all been jabbed and they're going to get sicker. So the Future Health Report forecasts communicable diseases such as influenza and other infections and are more severe in the elderly. I know exactly what it is, people. They can talk about all this other stuff that never increased, but they now will have to deal with the after effects of the vaccine itself as the death rate continues to climb. And they can't point the finger at anything except themselves. That's what's happening here. So I won't go any more into the story, but there she is again, waving the bent finger, going, "I need more money." For what? You've already caused enough problems. I think you should exit. Anyway, next story. It's got, now we're getting up to date again. This is the January 11th, 2024. And this is news.com.au. COVID cases to climb to high, not seen in a year as people urge to wear masks. COVID rates are climbing to a high not seen in over 12 months with the state's chief health officer, still in power people, urging people to wear masks to protect themselves and others. These are the things that were proven not to work. And I look out of the shop and when I walk around and I see people still wearing masks, driving in cars with their window down with masks on in boiling hot weather. And I think, you idiots, listening to people like her. So it says COVID rates in Sydney are soaring between levels not seen since last Christmas as infections increase across the globe. COVID-19 rates have hit a high in New South Wales over the last 2 weeks because the vaccines never work, people, with health authorities suggesting it may surpass numbers recorded in December 2022. Chief Health Officer Kerry Chant has asked people to testing positive for COVID-19 to wear masks in supermarkets in a press conference on Thursday morning. I wonder if she's going to allow dancing again. Who knows? And it says, this is what she's saying. You can go outside. Just minimise your contact, particularly with vulnerable people, Dr. Chance said, of people who test positive. So this is the warning. She's still there, people. It's a rat that has not left the ship. Scurrying around on the lower decks, still there. It says, she says, if you do have to go to the shops, choose a quieter time and wear a mask. I mean, really? She said there is a lot of COVID BS about people, and New South Wales Health would like to see people wearing masks, really, I think it's just her, to protect themselves in high-risk settings, like a doctor's surgery in hospital. So you're going to have to put the mask back on now when you go and go in to check up. Well, too bad, masks. So it'll be a full body suit. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous, people. Almost 18% of PCR tests came back positive over the last fortnight, according to New South Wales Health data. Is it even true, people? Is the data these days even true? Like the bankruptcies. I might just have a quick look at the bankruptcies and see if it's come back up since 36 or 39 companies went under, when it normally would be at 800 or 900. Let's have a quick look and see where we're at with that. Because these are the December totals. The statistics for December, and we're up to February, and they still haven't properly updated them. Let's see if they've done their due diligence. I'm not holding my breath. No, I'm clicking on it. No, it's still down at 39. But the month before that, in November, was 891. The month before that, in October, was 907. So they really think that we believe bankruptcies are down to 39. This is why I don't trust statistics anymore, people, and neither should you. It's designed to make you take your guard down. That's it. No other reason. I'll have a quick look at the gold too, people. Let's see if it's hovered further past the 2000. And I warn you that these are the two factors to let you know a recession's about to hit us full frontal, okay? So I've just gone to conspiracyhealth.com just to check the gold, and the gold is up to 2000 as of the 3rd of February 2024, according to abcbullion.com.au, 2042. So it is not coming down, people. It is going to keep going up, and a recession is definitely going to hit. Okay? Be warned. Don't be a fool with your head in the sand, people. It's not about me predicting anything. It's me just looking at those two things. And you can do exactly the same. Go to conspiracyhealth.com. Look at the right-hand side of the widget bar. You'll see gold. Click on that. Turn it into USDs, not AUDs. And then go to the Oz bankruptcies and click on that. And see what I'm seeing. There's no rocket science, no crystal ball, people. So let's see if she's adding any death threats. She's still in office. So we'll see if anyone's poked the finger at her. One sec. No, I couldn't find any death threats online, but all I found was when someone said to her, were you going to resign because of the Sydney's outbreak? This is when people actually started to die. She said, I'm committed to seeing this outbreak behind us. I'm committed to doing all I can as part of a team across health and across government. So no, she didn't care about, because apparently it was a news interview where she started crying because two or three people had died of COVID. So it was crocodile tears, obviously, people. And then someone said, are you going to resign? And she said, no, absolutely not. So she's not going anywhere. She's going to be in this for the long haul during pandemic two. Get ready. Now, the third and final one for today is going to be Caroline Edwards. And you're going to go, never heard of her. Yeah, neither, and still no one would have heard of her now even, because she's done a very good job of shielding herself from the public eye. Now, you've got to know that this is the actual person that represented Australia at the WHO, that was one of the executive board members that's hand went into the air when they said it's time for a pandemic. That's who this person is. And it's been incredible. I can't find a Wikipedia. Her LinkedIn is, you have to join. You can't just like find it on a search. But if you remember, I did the WHO. This is, let's see if I can get it up here. It's called The Who's Who of the Who. It's I've still got it on the widget bar on the left-hand side of conspiracyhealth.com. If you scroll down, you'll see The Who's Who of the Who. And you click on that widget, and it's got parts 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And amongst that list for Australia is Caroline Andrews. Okay, and you're saying, well, who is she? Well, I can't even read it off of Wikipedia, but we're going to go through it, and then by the end of this, you'll know exactly who this COVID rat is of Oz, because this is probably the worst one, simply because you cannot trace her now. And she has been rewarded. But anyway, I'm going down the list now of all the different countries. I'll tell you what part it's on so you can go and look at it. If you've got time, go and click on conspiracyhealth.com, the left-hand side of the widget bar, scroll down till you get to the who's who of the who, and click on it. And then I'm scrolling down now, and I'll tell you exactly where it is so you can go straight to it and read her name. And then you'll know. But what I want to know, there it is there. So number 30, okay, in a list of, I think, about 36 from memory. There were 34 executive board members of the WHO at the time of the pandemic that were the ones that declared it was a pandemic. And half of them aren't even doctors. In her case, okay, she's got medical experience. But anyway, I'll go back to it. I've already got links on this, so we'll see if any of the links are broken, because this was done back then. So it says 30, Australia, Dr. Caroline Andrews. And then I've put, where is our illustrious, not a doctor, Health Minister Greg Hunt? That's because he's not a doctor, but still. It's got a link here. North Queensland syphilis outbreak leads to 6 infant death. And that's on the Express Digest. Now, I think I have that one on a link I wanted to talk about anyway. So what I'll do is I'm going to go through the links now, and I'm going to come back and we'll go through it. But this one cannot get away, okay? This one must be exposed, okay, people? This is serious, because most of the people listening right now would have never have heard of her. But she is one of the 34 that said, yes, it's time for the world to go into a pandemic mode, okay? This is when the Emergency Act came, and then we were forced by a mandate to follow what the WHO declared an emergency, okay? This is when it started. One sec. Now, I'm on the WHO site now. That's apps.who.int, which is actually the WHO's composition of the board. And I've gone to Australia, and there's a new person. So she's done a runner, and I know that because I know where she's ended up. But there's a new guy called Mr. Blair Excel. I've absolutely never heard of him. But this is the new person with the hand that goes into the air with the next pandemic. So I need to go through that list again, because obviously some faces will have changed. But at least you know who the 34 executive board members of the WHO they are when they declare the next pandemic. Because a lot of these ones I'm looking at look like they're new. Some of them are older, like some of them are like the Japanese one. The guy that represents Japan is 21 to 24. But there's other new ones there, like China, 22. It's got 2022 to 2025. Okay, and this new one from Australia is 2023. So this only just happened not long ago to 2026. That's how long they're on the board for before they usually get replaced. But there you go. So there's a new guy that I'll look into. I won't do it tonight because we want to focus on her. We're not going to let this rat get away, people. Okay. So it looks like she's, I'm just going to the first article. This is the first article. This is in 2018. And it's from expressdigest.com. And the headline is, see if I can find the headline. And it's actually the headline I I read out earlier that says North Queensland syphilis outbreak leads to 6 infant death. So this is when she first sort of gets into the public eye. March 18th, 2nd of March 2018, expressdigest.com. An outbreak of syphilis has claimed the life of the 6th infant in remote North Queensland as mothers pass on the sexually transmitted disease to their children during childbirth. So you're thinking, well, what's that got to do with her? And as you scroll down, I'm not going to read the whole article, obviously. And I'm still getting to where she pops up. Department of Health's Caroline Andrews acknowledged the number of syphilis cases was rising. We're also very alarmed and distressed. We take it very seriously and see it as a very important thing for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So you can see where she was at in 2018, more or less worrying about Aboriginal health. Shows a picture of her. That's the end of that story. Then it moves on to April the 23rd, 2020. Now, she's already become the what they call the Health Department Acting Secretary, Caroline Andrews. The authorities were working hard and fast to get an app. Now, this is to do with coronavirus tracking app won't necessarily be backed by legislation. Now, the article peters off because it's one of those subscription ones, but it says a new mobile phone coronavirus app might be introduced without legislation to back it. Health Department Acting Secretary Caroline Edwards revealed on Thursday. So this is, they're actually telling you it's not legal. So there's no more to the story because it's a subscription base, but you can see that it's 2020 and she's already starting to gain power from it. Okay. The next one is actually the full article. I won't go into the whole thing, but I'll put it up. Then it goes on to May the 26th, 2020. Health Minister orders probe into the use of counterfeit masks in hospitals. So she seems more like Sherlock Holmes than a doctor, doesn't she, people? She's been put into there to probe and find things. Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt has ordered the top-level probe into concerns counterfeit masks were issued to doctors and nurses who may have been caring for coronavirus patients. And it's got Acting Federal Health Department Secretary, long titles, people, Caroline Edwards, under questioning on Tuesday, said the Senate inquiry into the government's COVID-19 response said the TGA would investigate the concerns, but rejected the suggestion that defective masks had been let through by the rule change. So more illegal things coming from the department again, people. Who do you trust? And it just goes on and on. I'm not going to read any more. This is obviously to do with the masks, which we know do not work. And of course, other countries are going to try and flog them, especially China. Then it moves on to Caroline Edwards to retire from the health department. Nothing about the WHO and no Wikipedia. This is the very person that put their hand up to say yes as a 34th member of the executive board of the WHO, the World Health Organization. We declare that this is an emergency and a pandemic. This is the person, people. June the 4th, 2021. Caroline Edwards to retire from the health department. Bag of gold, maybe? And it's got Caroline Edwards is set to retire from her role as Associate Secretary of the Department of Health, Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced on Friday. Done a runner. Let's see how big the bag of gold was, people. No more to the story. It's another subscription one. It's from the CanberraTimes.com.au. Caroline Edwards joins the Victorian government in diplomatic roles. You're going, what? August the 2nd, 2021. So we're getting closer to the truth, people. It says the Victorian government has appointed, this is Daniel Andrews, has appointed former Commonwealth public servant Caroline Edwards to a senior trade role in New York. There's your bag of gold, people. Edwards recently left the Australian Public Service after leading Australia's response to the COVID-19 pandemic in the role of Associate Secretary at the Department of Health. She previously served in Deputy Secretary roles at the Health and at the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. Where's the World Health Organization? There's no mention of it, people. There's nothing there. Wouldn't you put that in there as the most important thing of all? That the hand went up to say it was part of a World Health Organization push for a pandemic? No, not there. Very hard to find, but it's there. I've saved all the stuff, people. When I put it up, the cut and paste will be there that they couldn't break the links on, like LinkedIn did and Wikipedia. But anyway, that's what I'm saying. You can't believe this happens. You can't believe that they get rewarded. They do. Okay. You can't believe that these people exist still with no conscience. They do. Okay. They're psychopaths, people. That's why they don't feel the heat. They don't think that what they did was wrong. They actually would come back and do it again. and there's some still remaining. But anyway, she's left the WHO. She's got out of that one and handed the baton to this other person, which I'll look up, ready for pandemic two. Anyway. Okay, now I wasn't going to talk about this in today's podcast, but I'm going to because it's very, very important. The US has just started airstrikes against what they call Iranian targets, and they've done 85 airstrikes. Now, 13 hours ago, they issued this on livemap.com. Well, actually, it's on this particular one, it's iran.liveuamap.com, which is the livemap.com site that I have on the left-hand side of the widget bar. The left-hand side of Conspiracy Oz's widget bar, if you scroll down, you'll just see the map there, the live one that says you've got the Ukraine, what, Russian war, and you've got the Israeli Gaza. But if you click on it and go to the actual live map, I might have to put this one up too because this is quite serious. Anyway, so I've gone to 13 hours ago. It says this is the start of our response. And this is the US's response to the three US soldiers that were killed in that bombing strike, or in that air drone strike in Yemen. Well, I think it's Yemen. Hang on, let me just check that. It might have been Jordan. One sec. Yeah, it was Jordan. I've just got the... it's all over the news anyway, but I've got it up on... just did a search on it. The New York Times, Biden honours three US soldiers killed in Jordan. The reason I'm reading this off, I know it's not Australian news, but it's world news, but this is serious. I mean, Ukraine is now begging the US for nuclear weapons so they can fight the Russians. And you already know how bad that sounds. Well, now you've got the US in the Middle East bombing targets that they say are Iranian. Doesn't that seem exactly what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians by saying, oh, we're after Hamas. So they're killing all the Palestinians because they don't know who Hamas is. Well, now they've got the US killing anyone in the Middle East that they think might be Iranian operatives. This is an open door to a world war on a scale we've never seen before, because this is going to be nuclear. Okay, the Russians don't like to be backed against the wall, neither do the US, and neither do anybody. So, and Iran has nuclear weapons, people. Okay, if this becomes a war where they actually strike Iran, they will use them, because it goes beyond borders. It becomes religious. And we all know Muslims can be very fanatical. But if push comes to shove, we're going to see a Holocaust like we've never seen before. You think Nagasaki and Hiroshima and Chernobyl, the accident, even Fukushima were bad. These are deliberate acts of nuclear weapons that are modern. Remember, the atomic bomb, people, that was let off was in 1945. How long ago do you think that was? 80 years? What do you think they have now? Okay? They don't just kill 100,000 people in one bomb. This is going to kill millions. So you think the pandemic was bad over 3 years, 4 years, with how many deaths? 6-7 million? They're going to do that in one day. So we're in real big trouble here. Anyway, the best way, if you want to just monitor it, and I wasn't going to do anything on this tonight. I had other stories. I've got plenty of other stories to talk about, but this thing is just, it's just come out of the, because I'm doing it on a Saturday, it's come out today, all this stuff. So I've had to get it, I had to get onto it. So what I'm saying is that if you go to livemap.com, and I'll just go back to it now, and so what I've done is I've traced all the reports. They map news reports from everywhere, from the military and everybody, and they put the links to a world map. That's how livemap.com works. On this particular one, I've gone to Iran, because they have a world map. You can select regions. And I've got the Israeli-Palestine one, which they're now calling Israel-Palestine as opposed to Israel-Gaza, because that's what it's become. And they've also got a Ukraine map, which I've got as a short link in the widget bar at conspiracyhouse.com. But I'm just going to walk through this anyway so you don't have to. And that first story I read, it's got here, I'll just go back to it. Okay, so this is in Florida. Okay, this is where the announcement came. I'm just clicking it. It's got Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps and affiliated militia groups continue to represent a direct threat to the stability of Iraq, the region, and the safety of Americans. We will continue to take action, do whatever is necessary to protect our people and hold those responsible who threaten their safety. General Michael Eric Guerrilla, got to get that right, the US commander. So that's the first link. You can see that on the map. You can just flick around the little icons. You click on them and it'll tell you how long ago the article or the link was. But the most interesting one was I clicked on the UK one. I saw one for the UK and I clicked on it. It's got a little icon of a like a jet, like a bomber. Clicked on it and it says, B-1 bombers departed from Lakenheath Air Base in the UK on a mission directed towards the Middle East. So these are the bombers that have gone over to the Middle East. So they'd be the US bombers. Anyway, if you go over to the map near Iran and you go into Iraq, there's more icons. So I've clicked on another one here. It gives you a timeline. This was 3 hours ago. Iran-backed militias targeted the Harar Air Base in northern Iraq where US troops are stationed. So this is it. That was 3 hours ago. Then there's other icons here. You've got another bombing icon here, which is 14 hours ago. Airstrikes targeting Ayash warehouses in the western countryside of Deir Ezzor. Then that's, so I'm not sure who's bombing who. I'm going to click on another one. Also 14 hours ago. It's got airstrikes now on the desert of Al Mayadeen, east of Deir Ezzor, the one I just read. Then also in the same link, Fox News, according to an American official, the strikes are beginning of a long campaign to target Iranian agents in Iraq and Syria. And then you've got the Syrian media. The US attack targeted 12 sites in Al Mayadeen, Al Bukamal, and the vicinity of the Al Qam crossing. So this is all the reports of these bombings. There's another bombing symbol. I'll just check that. And it's about the same thing. 14 hours ago, same thing. So I'm going to click on this other one, which is another bombing one. It says, CENTCOM statement of US strikes in Iraq and Syria. At 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on February the 2nd, remember US is the day before, US Central Command forces conducted airstrikes in Iraq and Syria against Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps. Force and affiliated militia groups. So this is a direct attack on Iran people. US military forces struck more than 85 targets with numerous aircraft to include long-range bombers flown from the United States. Well, there you go. The airstrikes employed more than 125 precision munitions. The facilities that were struck included command and control operations, centers, intelligence centers, rockets and missiles, and unmanned air vehicle storages, and logistics and munition supply chain facilities of militia groups and their IRGC sponsors who facilitated attacks against the US and coalition forces. It's on, people. It's on. And there's another bomb one here, which is, again, 14 hours ago, same sort of story. But there's another one here. I'll see where that goes to. 15 hours ago. So it's all on. This is recent. Now, this is a one that's actually in Baghdad in Iraq. The Iraqi foreign minister summons the charge de affairs of the US embassy in Baghdad to protest the American aggression. So the Iraqis don't want them there. That was 15 minutes ago, people. The Iraqis do not want the Americans there bombing their country to look for other people. Exactly what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank. The Israelis are searching for Hamas, but they're killing tens of thousands of people to try and get them. These are war crimes, people. I mean, remember, Netanyahu supported Hamas when they beat, Yasser Arafat with the PLA. If you remember them back in the 70s and 80s. And he supported the fact that they were a terrorist group, but they took power. No opposition to him. So in my opinion, working with the United Nations, Netanyahu and the Israeli, like some of the Israeli government, they have gone in and created, and Hamas as well, obviously, a smoking gun and a false flag for Israel to begin this war of the Middle East, with the US now dragged into it. This is what's happened, people. Remember, the US came into it because shipping was targeted that was Israeli by the Houthis, which are, you know, Iranian-backed militia. And this is where it started. So again, the Americans don't know where to look for Hezbollah or Houthi. They're just going to kill anyone. And now they're actually targeting Iran by targeting the Royal Guards or whatever they're called. So this is a war. It has started. That's why I had to say it. I couldn't, read all that myself and then not report on it. Even though this is an Australian podcast, that's big news. We're talking about nuclear weapons. If the Americans give Ukraine nuclear weapons and Iran has nuclear weapons, Russia has nuclear weapons, the Americans have nuclear weapons, Israel has nuclear weapons, go and watch if you want to see something about nuclear accidents, go and watch Chernobyl that happened in 1986. Go and watch the doco on that. You can find it anywhere. Just do a search on it, find it. You watch it. Watch that. And then try to understand that was in 1986 and it was an accident. Fast forward to 2024, where it's not going to be an accident. Now you're really going to understand how dangerous this is going to be. Okay? It means all the reporting of all the news we've ever talked about is irrelevant because this will be an Armageddon. We're not going to be able to come back from something like this. So Biden and Netanyahu and whoever, they need to be stopped before this escalates to that. And it won't take much to do it. All right? Didn't want to talk about it, but there it is. And on the Ukrainian front, the problem with what Zelensky's got is the Russians have more munitions. The Americans and that, they've all agreed $80 billion the European Union will give to Ukraine. Endless amounts of money to be thrown into the wind. The Russians are pounding them with 20,000 shells a day. And the response of the Ukrainians is about 5,000. So it's only a matter of time before the Russians destroy them all, regardless. So that's why they want nuclear weapons now. I'll see if I can find the story in one sec. Well, the story I heard, which was that the US were asked by Zelensky to supply them with nuclear weapons, is not really found. I'm looking for it, but I'm thinking, where do I hear that? So before I falsely report on something, there was another thing that was mentioned too that says Zelensky did not ask NATO to strike Russia with nuclear weapons. So that might have been the story that was circulating, but I'm almost certain I heard on the news, might have been on PBS or something like that, that Zelensky wanted nuclear weapons from the US. So obviously that's not online anywhere, so that can't be right. So it must have been misheard. So before a rumour starts it, I've said that I'm just going to debunk it straight away. But that doesn't mean there's not a problem there. I mean, it says here, and this is a story from 2021, and it's got Ukraine may seek nuclear weapons if left out of NATO. This is from aljazeera.com, and this was, just get the date, 16th of April 2021. So regardless of anything I thought was happening now, this is a section of time in 2021 when Ukraine were going to seek nuclear weapons, but from who, that remains to be seen. So it's got Kiev's ambassador to Germany calls on the Transatlantic Security Alliance to grant Ukraine long-sought membership. And it's got a Ukrainian, if I can find this story properly, there's got a pop-up in front of it, one sec. It's a Twitter pop-up, or X, or whatever you want to call it. It's got a Ukrainian diplomat has reportedly warned Kiev may be forced to acquire nuclear weapons to safeguard the country's security if NATO does not accede to its membership demand and amid spiraling tensions with neighbouring Russia. It's got Ukraine's ambassador to Germany suggested to national public radio network Deutschlandfunk on Thursday that President Volodymyr Zelensky's administration was weighing up all possible options as fears mount over a possible escalation of hostilities in the country's conflict-stricken east. So that was 3 years ago, people. And obviously, the war is still going. Okay, so that was at the beginning. So if we fast forward to now, you get this story. Ukraine's hopes for victory over Russia are slipping away. And this came out on January the 29th, 2024, from the WashingtonPost.com. It says, it's hard to ignore the sense of desperation in Ukraine's corridors of power. Nearing 2 years since Russia launched its full-scale invasion, authorities in Kiev maintain their long-standing entreaty to partners in the West deliver us more arms, more aid, more political commitments. President Volodymyr Zelensky toured Western capitals at the end of last year, pleading for support amid growing international fatigue with the conflict and the paralysis of the US Congress over new supplemental funding for Kiev. It says around the same time, his top general, Valery Zaluzhny, bemoaned the stalemate that had set into place after the much-anticipated Ukrainian counteroffensive in 2023 failed to make strategic headway against Russia's deep defensive lines. US officials and their Western counterparts, as my colleague reported over the weekend, anticipate a lean year ahead, where Ukraine's increasingly exhausted forces focus more on consolidating their defense than chipping away at Russia's land grabs. The Kremlin controls roughly a fifth of Ukraine's internationally recognized territory, including Crimea, which it illegally annexed in 2014, and a broad sweep of Ukraine's southeast. The US view of the course of the conflict undercuts Zelensky's stated ambition of driving Russia out by this October. Last week, Pentagon officials came empty-handed to a monthly 50-nation coordinating meeting for Ukraine, with future US money for arms and aid snared by domestic politics. On the front lines, reports indicate stocks of ammunition and artillery shells are running low for many Ukrainian units. We get asked, what's our plan? But we need to understand what resources we're going to have. Ukrainian lawmaker Roman Kostenko told my colleagues, right now everything points to the possibility that we will have less than last year when we tried to do a counteroffensive and it didn't work out. If we will have even less, then it's clear what the plan will be. It will be defense. It says, looming far away from the battlefield is a political drama in Washington. And it's got House Republicans have already stymied the latest tranche in funding that President Biden is trying to allocate for Kiev. Analysts believe Russian President Vladimir Putin is holding out for a potential return to power of former President Donald Trump, the likely Republican presidential candidate for the November election. Trump may scale back support for Ukraine and take a friendly view of the Kremlin security concerns in Eastern Europe. They're not going to let Trump win. I'm telling you now, they will assassinate him if he gets even close. I'm telling you. This is one of the reasons, okay? It's a global push to control the world with a central government, okay? A world government, new world order. It doesn't matter what you call it. That's what it is. It'll be a central control where there's one government ruling the whole planet, one army, one police force. No flags. It's going to be something none of us can actually imagine because we've never grown up with that. But that's what they want to try and do. And they see people like Trump and Putin and all these players as getting in the way of the agenda. Okay, that's why you see Zelensky at the World Economic Forum preaching to them, because it's all part of the same cabal. They're just following orders. It's part of a global control. And they just see these are the last remaining ones in their way, like Iran, Russia, Trump. People like that are in their way. They're nationalists. They're supporting their own countries. They don't want them. Okay? They want to override them with immigration and make them into one country worldwide. That's what they do. Anyway, so they're never going to let Trump in. So Zelensky's not going to have to worry about that. What Zelensky's got to worry about is the Russians overrunning them. And if you look at this particular article, there's another one. Actually, I'll just see if it's the same one. It could be the same. It's a very long article. I can't read this one. It says, the United States and its partners held back from supplying Ukraine with Western-made capabilities at a time when they've had the biggest effect and prohibited Kiev from using Western weapons, to strike military targets on Russian soil. Isn't that interesting? So this is very dangerous. It means like Ukraine is a battlefield. That's it. You win and lose on that battlefield, but there's no other countries that are going to get involved. So that's very interesting that they use all their weapons, dry them all out, and that's what they're doing. Now, it says here, it wasn't that article, it's this one. February the 2nd, 2024, this is from theconversation.com. Ukraine recap. Zelensky battles corruption and a major row with his commander-in-chief. So this is where it all starts to fall apart. And they're sort of predicting this in about 6 months there'll be a sort of a ceasefire, and they're going to let Russia and Ukraine make a peace deal, okay? Which is not good for the Americans. It means that they lose because they never had victory. It says a Russian winter offensive flagged here a fortnight ago appears to be underway, according to the Institute for the Study of War, which has noted operations in the Donetsk and the Luhansk oblasts, resulting in small Russian gains of territory. It says Ukrainian intelligence reports that the aim is to push towards Kharkiv while occupying the whole administrative areas of Donetsk and Luhansk. It says, but the feeling is that Russia is unlikely to be able to fulfill this ambition. And it says the head of Ukraine's military intelligence says, and he expected Russian forces would be completely exhausted by spring as ever. And the key will be whether Ukraine can obtain enough ammunition to survive until then. According to a recent report by Bloomberg, the European Union is expected to deliver only half of the 1 million shells it has promised Ukraine by March the 1st. It says, meanwhile, both the EU and the US have been struggling to get their aid packages agreed, although it's reported that the Hungarian President Orban is bowed to pressure from other EU members and agreed not to obstruct their 50 billion euros military aid package. But this leaves the US President Joe Biden trying to find ways to convince Republican senators to fall into line over his plans to provide Ukraine with $60 billion of military aid. It's just nuts, isn't it, people? It's just nuts. There's nothing else to read, but you can see that. I'm just looking and see if it's got that part about joining. No, it's not in that article. It must have been in the other one. Although it might have, actually, it's in this article. This is from May 2023. It's got, and this is like a prediction for now. Professor Tim Willacy-Wilsey highlighted that if Ukraine doesn't defeat Russia in the coming 6 months, remember this was in May, so it's now, the West is likely to pressure President Volodymyr Zelensky to negotiate with Putin. An accepted negotiated outcome will be almost impossible to achieve following Putin's recent diplomatic successes. So there you go. So it's now. Right now, even though an aid package has gone forward, what they're going to say to Zelensky eventually is you're going to have to make some sort of deal with Putin. That's what they're going to do, because now the US is going to shift its focus onto the Middle East. That's what's just happened. I had to read all this out, people, because I just felt that this is the time to do it. I don't normally talk about this stuff on the podcast, but I just felt that these two events are so big and so dangerous, they have to be mentioned now. Even though these wars and these sort of things have been going on for years, I just feel there's something coming. There's a big pressure cooker moment that's coming. And my deal, and I just hope that it's not involving nuclear weapons, but it's just so unpredictable. And people say, oh, they'll never do it. And that's when you start thinking, but what if they do? Because there's no contingency plan. Nobody's thinking about that. When Fukushima went off, nobody thought that 10 years, a decade later, we'd still have the problem, and now they're releasing that radioactive water that they were saving from the reactors back into the ocean. And Japan said, oh, that's fine. We treated it. And everyone just turns a blind eye again. And you just think, oh, we have problems with PFAS in the water. Well, now we have problems with that. And that was an accident, apparently. So we're looking at a war that could actually deliberately use nuclear weapons. They're even saying that Russia may let off small tactical ones, like little ones, little explosions here and there that are nuclear powered. So that's the beginning. We want to hope that never, ever eventuates, because the amount of weapons on this planet, we will not have a planet. Forget about climate change and overpopulation. We won't have anything to talk about because there won't be anyone to talk. And speaking of anyone to talk, this is the UNICEF's Executive Director, Catherine Russell. Says she understands the concerns of donor countries, including Australia, who has suspended aid to the United Nations Refugee Agency in Gaza following allegations of staff involvement in the October 7 terrorist attacks in Israel. See what I mean, people? This is the UN involved in Hamas and this strike on Israel, which has caused this whole cascading of events in the Middle East. It says Australia is one of the group of countries that suspended aid to the UNRWA after evidence was presented by Israel to the United Nations and the Biden administration that 12 of the Palestinian Refugee Agency workers had links to Hamas and were involved in the attacks in southern Israel. This is abc.net.au, came out on the 1st of February 2024. It says the UNRWA said last Friday that it had fired several employees and launched an investigation. And it says, I think the donors need to feel comfortable. And I fully understand that and appreciate that, Ms. Russell told 7:30 in an exclusive interview. I don't think that's an unreasonable position. The head of the UNRWA and the Secretary General have been very clear that this is just a horrible situation and have asked for an immediate investigation and a fast investigation so they can figure out what happened. Obviously, from our perspective, the last thing we want is anybody working for United Nations who does anything associated with terrorists and with organisations that are destructive to other people, she said. Really? It says, I think there's a great incentive for everyone to understand exactly what happened and for anyone who did something that they are not supposed to do to be punished immediately. Australia paused funding to the UNRWA after the Albanese government committed an additional $6 million to the agency during Foreign Minister Penny Wong's visit to the Middle East. So they gave $6 million to a United Nations arm that was involved in October 7th terrorist attack on Israeli kids. And they're trying to tell us to turn a blind eye to that? Oh, it was just a couple of them. It's all fine now. Speaking after a meeting with New Zealand ministers in Melbourne, Senator Wong did not give a time frame for a decision or reinstating funding to the UNRWA, but signaled that Australia was considering doing so. So it did just blow over. More than 1.4 million Palestinians are sheltering within UNRWA facilities, and 3,000 of the workers are working on humanitarian response to the most trying of conditions. This is why this happened, people. This is why they're sheltering, and there's millions of them running this way and that, because Hamas went in and killed those Israeli kids. That's what this is about. So if the UN helped Hamas do that, they need to be reprimanded for it, not just blamed, you know, 12 people, oh, they did it. Nothing to do with us, even though they work for the United Nations. So it's it seems like they're just going to brush it under the carpet like they always do. Oh, nothing to see here, move along. That's really what's happening here, people. And it says, Ms. Russell said the UN wanted to see a thorough independent investigation done as quickly as possible so they can quickly get it under the carpet, people. She said the Palestinian Refugee Agency carried out crucial work in Gaza. Well, just in Gaza, they have 13,000 people working for the UNRWA, provide kind of all social services in the area. So my only point here is that they're not doing it. It's not clear to me who will be able to do it. What? And it says Miss Russell is one of the few UN agency leaders who have been able to visit Gaza since the war broke out in October. She said the situation on the ground was terrifying for children. Well, you probably got out of there as soon as you got there, lady. So, you know, more terrifying for you by the sound of it. But anyway, there you go. I told you, people, they're going to get them out of the whole Gaza and go and get the gas. And the US and all these countries that are pointing the finger at Iran and Hamas and Palestine and Jordan and Yemen, they want the gas. It's trillions of cubic I can't remember what the actual calculation is, but it's trillions of cubic, I'm trying to remember what the measurement is, of gas. I'll just say that. But what I'm getting at, it's one of the biggest gas reserves ever in the world. So, and they found it 10 years ago, and Israel 6 months ago started doing exploration on it, even though the Palestinians said they owned it. You understand what is happening here? You got to understand that all these countries are getting rid of their coal, and they're not replacing it. So the more people are coming into the world with less energy. They can't get electricity, they can't get energy because there's just not enough to go around. So, of course, it's going to get to a critical mass where they actually start to fail. And so going getting more gas just keeps the lights on. That's it. Simple as that, people. And speaking about lights on, how about air conditioners, people? This is a story that's this is really bad. I mean, when I saw this, I went, what? abc.net.au came out on the 31st of January 2024. Energex remotely cuts power to 170,000 air conditioners six times in a month. You're going, what? How can they do that? Queensland's state-owned power grid remotely turned down almost 170,000 air conditioners 6 times in the past 2 months as part of a scheme to protect the electricity network. There's not enough power. Some installers said they were wary of the Peak Smart Scheme, which was introduced by the Newman government in 2012, because the guidelines regarding air control were not clear. Energex and Ergon access air conditioners through Peak Smart Meters. Told you about smart meters, people. Which are controlled via power lines, usually in return for access to a cash rebate for up to $400. The goal of the meters is to reduce pressure on the network at peak times, often on hot days when you actually want the air conditioner. The signal tells the air conditioner to drop into an energy efficient mode, similar to an economy setting, an Energy Queensland spokesman said. The fan keeps running but cycles the compressor down 50%. The technology is designed to be set and forget, so you won't have to do anything, nor should you notice any significant difference to your comfort. Signing up to the government scheme also allows Energex or Ergon staff to visit properties occasionally. Residents or workers are given 5 days' notice. Users are not told when their unit is affected, but installers and repairers are given notice to case customers report what they think is a malfunction. Renters of new property owners may not realise their units are fitted with the device. Smart meters, people. Multiple installers contacted by the ABC said they were wary about the meters and the potential for the government and energy providers to control an appliance in the home. Beginning of the Internet of Things, people, 5G, all that, forgot about all that. And it says Todd Christie, the owner of Sunshine Coast business Salty Air, said he urged clients to think twice about having a Peak smart meter installed, because it meant Ergon or Energex could, Energex. I can't say it. Energex. So I'm going to stick with that. It's probably wrong. Could take control of their units on the hottest days of the year. Can you imagine that? You go to turn your aircon up and it won't go up. That's just criminal. You own the device. But because they're saying that we now have control of your device, they're going to use the climate change, not enough energy as the excuse. Very, very dangerous, people. Same with electric cars and everything that can go onto the internet. Your fridge, all those things can be controlled and turned off and on when they feel like it. And it says here, it just doesn't make any sense. To what extent is it controlled and how often do they use it, he said. This is Todd Christie of the Sunshine Coast business, Salty Air. Well, common sense, hello. It says it's not just really worth the risk of wiring that up when you want to obviously put an aircon on for those hot days when you need it. Just from that advice, nobody I've ever installed for has ever said I still want to do it. Ergon and Energex said peak smart light limiting should only occur a few times per year. Yet there have been 6 events since December the 1st and 9 last year. So they're liars. The highest rate since the program began. Remember, eventually they're going to say it's for climate change. You've got to stop using energy. And that'll be like probably 50 times a year. And there was nothing you can do about it because you agree you've got to save the planet for the elites. So on Monday and Saturday last week, Energex used its remote access to limit 169,490 air conditioners to run at 50% power between 4:30 p.m. and 6:50 p.m. across the southeast. That's everybody. At 5 p.m. on Monday, the network experienced record demand for power as temperatures soared into the mid-30s with drenching levels of humidity. So they'll say climate change is causing everyone to use their air conditioners, so we need to kill more people. No, I'm just joking about the last bit. It applied the same limits between 5:20 p.m. and 7:20 p.m. on December the 16th, 17th, 28th and 29th, and once each in March and February 2023. The caps were only applied once to 14,500 peak smart, if not very smart, aircon units in regional Queensland in November last year. So they're hitting all the farmers. Go to turn their aircon on, doesn't work. That's where they're at the hottest. So that'll drive them off the farms, won't it? That's another story too I need to get into, about what's happening with all the farms around the world and how they're being driven off their farms because of climate, I think it's like rules that they've got. And that's big. I've got a report on that next week, definitely. That'll be a story definitely for next week. And it's got According to Energect's website, a survey found 70,000 people using the device did not notice any difference when the measure was activated. Yeah, really. Minister Mick DeBrenny said the scheme made for a smarter grid that worked better when demand was high, including extreme weather, which they reckon it's going to get hotter. So they're going to have more control, understand? So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me this, but that's a smart meter, people. Go and check to see if you've been given one without even knowing that you've got one. I mean, this is a story about coal power stations closing and, you know, what's happening to them. And this story, so I'm not going to read the whole story, but it's called Yallourn Power Station Safety Concerns are Bad News as Australia Enters Long Hot Summer. This is the 21st September 2023, abc.net.au, but I'm just going to go down to this part. It says, Yallourn's owner, Energy Australia, which is Communist China, they own Energy Australia, said it was spending $400 million as part of efforts to keep the generator online until his scheduled retirement in 2028. So that's another one that'll be gone in less than 4 years. It says the improve asset reliability, safety and performance ahead of its retirement in 2028, a spokeswoman said, but not everyone is convinced the money will be enough. It's got Australian Academy of Technological Services and Engineering Vice President Ivan Maril said, keeping old coal plants alive was becoming very tricky. And it says, firstly, he said green energy sources such as wind and solar are hollowing out the business model of coal plants, meaning there was less money available for upkeep. So you can see that they're trying to destroy the coal-fired power station, and that's why we're going to have less energy. The wind and the solar, as much as they think it's great, is not, it does not cover the megawatts, or the gigawatts, you should say, as these energy companies do. Now, they're mentioning that one because it's foreign-owned, it's Chinese, but that's all right. There's another one. More than 100 workers laid off after Queensland coal miner New Wilkie Energy enters administration. 4th of January 2024, abc.net.au. More than 100 workers have been laid off from the Western Downs coal mine after its owner went into administration. New Wilkie Energy, which operates the Wilkie Creek mine near Dalby, about 200 kilometres west of Brisbane, was placed in administration on December the 27th. Administrator B.R. Ferrier said, has been appointed to assess the business's position. New Wilkie Energy, a private company, acquired the mine site in July 2021 from mining giant Peabody Energy, which I think is an American one. The mine had been mothballed since 2014, and it says Western Downs Regional Council Mayor Paul McVeigh said 100 workers from the mine site had been laid off just prior to Christmas. So there you go. It's another one gone. So there's many of them. And people are saying, good, get rid of them. They don't understand what is actually coming and why it's going to affect everybody in the long run. Even this story here, this abc.net.au, analysis finds extending the Earrings lifespan, which is a mining site, costs $1.7 billion of damages in a year. 28th September 2023. That's because they want to make sure that you keep them closing, people. It says the cost of keeping Australia's largest coal-fired power station, the Earring, open beyond its 2025 closure date could be $1.7 billion a year in economic, social, and environmental damages. So there you go. That's the biggest coal-fired power station in Australia, and it's going to be gone next year. What do you think is going to happen to all of us, people, when there's not enough energy to go around? What do you really think is going to happen? This is very, very dangerous water we're in. We've got the problem of possible nuclear war around the world, and then we've got the possibility we're going to lose energy while heading, wait for it, into a recession. That's what I call massive, massive danger. And I'll just finish off with this story. I know it's all doom and gloom, but get your head out of the sand, people. Okay, this is time to actually wake up. December the 21st, 2023. This is from ZeroHedge.com. This is off the charts. Economist claims 2024 will bring the biggest crash of our lifetime. It says since 2009, there have been 100% artificial, unprecedented money printing and deficits. $27 trillion over 15 years to be exact. Economist Harry Dent told Fox Business on December the 19th. This is off the charts. 100% artificial, which means we're in a dangerous state. And it says, we need to get back down to normal. We need to send a message to central banks, he said. This should be a lesson. I don't think we'll ever revisit. I don't think we'll ever see a bubble for any of our lifetimes again. It says, US markets are currently in a bubble that started in late 2021 amid the COVID-19 pandemic. It says things are not going to come back to normal in a few years. We may never see these levels again, and this crash is not going to be a correction. It's going to be more like the 1929-1932 level, which is actually the Great Depression. And anybody who sat through that would have shot their stockbroker, Mr. Dent said, after making references to the stock market crash in 1929 that led to the Great Depression throughout the 1930s. If I'm right, it's going to be the biggest crash of our lifetime. Most of it happening in 2024. You're going to see it start and be more obvious by May. So there's your timeline. May this year, people. So if you just get out for 6 or 12 months and stuff stays at the highest valuation history, maybe you miss a little more gains. If I'm wrong, if I'm right, you're going to save massive losses and be able to reinvest a year or year and a half from now at unbelievably low prices and magnify your gains beyond compare. Mr. Dent's predictions of a market crash are nothing new. In 2009, he wrote The Great Depression Ahead, a book that forecasts a significant market crash. So I just thought I'd throw that in there to be careful, people, just be on your guard. This is probably the year when everything comes to a head, because it really does look that way, with massive wars and very, you know, the pandemic did cause a lot of people to rethink everything, and it shook us out of our normal, what do they call them? Not like habits, but like our normal routines is the word, and it's made people go all over the place and very directionless, and that's why there's no trust, there's no stability. There's a lot of uneasiness and people looking over their shoulder. That's why you need to be on your guard. So, you know, I just thought I'd put that out there. I didn't want to dwell too much on the doom and gloom, but just to get people to, there's a timeline this May this year. We'll see if that fellow's correct, that Dent guy. I'm not saying anything is going to happen or not going to happen, but still it's a good idea to get some sort of insight into what could be around the corner. Anyway. Okay, people, looks like I'm at the end of the podcast. I've waffled on for way too long. This is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Saturday, the 3rd of February, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.